The History of Personal Computing.
History, history, history. History of Personal Computing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the History of Personal Computing podcast. It's a show a week for 3 weeks in a row now. I'm Jeff, and I'm joined by my co-host, David. How you doing, David?
Jeff?
Yes. Anyway, 2 weeks ago, David interviewed me about the VCF East, so this time I'll be interviewing him about last weekend's VCF Southeast.
Gosh, it's been a week already.
It has been, yeah. And we have a special guest too, Alan Hightower. And
he Hello.
He brings a unique experience of having attended both shows. Alan is an officer and tell me if I get this wrong, integral member of the AHCS, Atlanta Historical Computing Society, who co-sponsors the show.
Well, I'm the treasurer. So
you're the treasurer. Well, that's an integral member.
Oh, real integral, Alan.
I got the purse strings, so I got the power.
That's right.
And also, just to mention, Alan actually went to both shows the year before, too.
Yep.
So Alan brings a lot to the table.
So I know I saw him in person twice, if I can just picture of all the people that walked through.
I was the one wearing the VCF Southeast t-shirt.
Oh, okay. Well, that gave you away now, didn't it?
Wait, wasn't everybody wearing those?
Yeah, everybody
at VCF East? Yeah.
We gave one to Evan. I don't know if he ever put it on.
So last year, Alan, so who all went from the AHCS last year?
So last year it was Flash Corliss, myself, Earl Baugh, and Brad Arnold, and Kyle Owen.
And then there was like one less of those people went this year.
I met Brad Arnold last year.
Yeah, so this year it was just Kyle Owen, who had a PDP exhibit at the e-show, and then myself and Flash.
Okay.
Did you stay at the Staybridge last year too?
Yeah, Staybridge last year.
Brad Allen was there. I think I met up with him for breakfast. He was wearing...
Brad Arnold. Is that
Brad
he meant?
Arnold.
He's the president of AHCS.
And he's on Antic.
I think he was the one that asked me to try to attend last year, but you know, just like this year, very short notice. Or not short notice, but very too close together. Let's put it this way. It's too close together.
Well, it's a curse and a blessing. So we actually got some of the speakers that we met last year, like Malcolm McLeod, to come down for a show just because they were so close together. But it would be nice if they were spread more apart and get, you know, just more attendance in general.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Actually, so I just listened to a podcast. Oh, it was the Retro Maccast, and they recorded it just before the show. And, you know, James from that show ended up making it, while John, who actually came to the show the year before at the Marathon exhibit, ended up having to work. But they were discussing about how, you know, because the shows are 2 weeks apart. And I don't know how many people would end up actually coming between the two shows, but you got to think maybe, so I don't know, Alan, is that something the club is considering?
We discussed it at great length. It's very difficult to plan a show around summertime because, you know, everyone has summertime events and then you have school and work in the fall and spring.
Yeah.
So there's only very few windows, you know, in the spring and fall where you can actually get good attendance.
Yeah.
So if we move it towards the fall, we're kind of in competition with Midwest as well. So
yeah, in August.
Right. So we had some synergies there where people were going to be in the States for VCF East. So we wanted to get them down to Atlanta. So that's why we went ahead and stayed with the spring date.
So maybe next year between March and the AHCS, maybe you put a little more distance between the two shows.
Yep. That would be best.
So. Or you can put it in January in Miami where it's still 85
there
degrees.
There you go.
Or just combine the two shows in, I don't know what, North Carolina.
Yeah.
VCF East Southeast, right?
East side.
Oh, make it Williamsburg. That way people can come and they can learn history too.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah. I mean, we created the show just because there wasn't anything like it in the Southeast. You know, everything was kind of up north. The West show hasn't been around for a few years. So we just needed to get an outlet so that people in the Florida, Miami, southern states could actually have a show to go to.
Right,
it's
right.
Different audience.
And I have to believe, too, that the show is mostly drawing from the region.
Yeah, and, you know,
the shows.
Township, you know, is kind of off the beaten path. You have huge metroplexes around it, but our venue is kind of right on a major street in Alpharetta, so we're catering more towards the general public than the core vintage collection community. So it's a bit different audience.
So the show was just last weekend, May 2nd, May 3rd, Saturday and Sunday. And so the VCF East was, and for the last 2 years, it's been 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So it was April 17th through the 19th.
Yes, the exhibits were only the final 2 days of the event.
You're talking about
East still, right?
Yeah.
East. I really love what they do on Friday. The sessions that they have are terrific. There's almost too many of them because, you know, they have three different educational tiers this year. And, you know, there were some time slots where I wanted to go to all three. Mm-hmm. And there just wasn't enough time to do that. And you just couldn't physically be at all three places.
But you got your free pizza, right?
Got the free pizza. And actually, I did a quick head count, like, at lunchtime on Friday. And I counted over 100 people just standing around eating pizza. So they have a great draw for their technical sessions, which is something that we're kind of struggling with down south. We just don't get that kind of core audience at our show yet.
Yeah, but in fairness, I mean, the VCF East has been going since 2000. Of course, it moved over after the first, I don't know if it was 2 or 3 years. Well, they didn't do one in 2001. I mean, but it's been around a lot longer. It's built momentum. And yeah, they're in a facility where it's also an established sort of thing that's open all the time.
Yeah, and we have a lot of members who did exhibits at our show that just couldn't stand behind their exhibit the whole time because they were busy running the show. Like Flash Corliss did an awesome job with retro gaming and soldering this year, and he just didn't have enough time to kind of engage people at his exhibit, and neither did I. I scaled mine back this year to a small static exhibit on Tandy's. And I was handling all the speaker area this year. So I was...
That was yours with like the Tandy? Wasn't it like a Tandy 2000?
I did a bit of an ode to Radio Shack business.
It was over there by the marathon area.
Yep.
Okay, so I was wondering whose that was.
I had a Tandy 2000, 3000, 4000, and 5000.
Wow.
And it was kind of, 35 years of Tandy catering to small businesses. So I wanted to highlight that.
Yeah,
I just saw a Tandy 2000 on eBay.
Yeah, I did too. I was looking at that.
It's unused or something like that.
It's in the box, I think.
Wow.
And the Tandy 2000 was a little bit unique in the fact that it had an 8186 processor.
Yeah, but it wasn't fully DOS compatible, so it was a little bit off. There was special software for it in a lot of cases.
And Bill Gates appeared in some printed ads for it.
Yeah, I actually printed some of those ads out. And yeah, really young, smiling, bright-faced Bill Gates. It's kind of odd to see.
When you become rich, you can...
But one thing I did is thanks to, I don't know the gentleman's name, the guy who runs RadioShackCatalogs.com, who kind of preserves...
That's a wonderful site.
It is. It preserves the history of all their normal and computer catalogs. I printed out a lot of the original pages when those machines came out, just so you could see the price differences between then and now. It's pretty staggering. And then I had the pink unicorn of Tandy's, of course, the 5000MC, which was one of the first non-IBM microchannel machines.
Oh, really?
Microchannel?
Yeah. You remember that? You don't remember that, Jeff?
Yeah, I remember it. I thought it was a mistake when IBM did it, but I guess Radio Shack thought they'd throw money
into it. I had no idea Radio Shack made microchannel machines, because I know... Yeah, believe it or not, it was big enough for
I wonder if that was a butterfly effect of where Radio
Shack AT&T now. Made microchannel machines.
I think Everex did too, if I'm not mistaken. Or no, actually, some other company did. But the thing IBM kind of enforced on licensees is in order to license microchannel, you had to pay back royalties for any IBM-compatible units that you'd built in the past.
The clone killer.
Yeah, and so PS2s IBM imposed and these really stiff penalties. And so only
back
companies...
royalties?
Back so royalties.
They would have had to pay for all the 1000s and
exactly.
Wow.
I don't know what that check
and they still went through with it.
Apparently so.
It is the butterfly effect.
I once worked for a bank in IT support. I wasn't really being a tech. I was being sort of like the supply side, sourcing the computers and other technical stuff they needed. And they were completely microchannel. They were completely OS2, IBM, and microchannel based. Corporation in a fairly large one in Florida too.
Yeah, most of the Tandy 2000s, they didn't sell very well, so they got converted into point-of-sale terminals for Radio Shack stores. So there's quite a lot of those floating around.
At least they were able to get those to, they didn't have to throw them away. Always a good thing if you can recycle your own stuff. But then again, Radio Shack stores were using Model 4s for back-end office work for the longest time. They were when I worked at Radio Shack for a Christmas season in 1991.
Yeah, I also had a Tandy 16B on display, yeah, which is very similar to Tandy 6000 HD. It actually still had the original hard drive and still booted Xenix.
And where'd you get that?
I got it at an estate sale here locally in Atlanta. Wow. Just happened to catch it in the classifieds.
Crazy. I don't think I've ever seen one of those other than at the show.
So we had, I think our attendance was around 500 visitors for both days. That's strictly adults. Kids were free.
It's a fair amount, yeah.
Yeah, and it was very, I was really happy to see that. Because, you know, unfortunately last year it was considerably less. Especially
on Sunday. I think
last year was about
300 total.
Yeah, and most of that was on Saturday, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah, I think it was. So. Yeah, the first year when you were very much involved in the show, you know, we had 1,500 people. Yeah. Yeah. That had a lot to do with the Apple pop-up.
Yeah.
Yeah, a guy named Lonnie Mims, who's a local businessman here in Atlanta, has a enormous personal collection of personal computers. And he provided the space, which we held VCF Southeast. It's a former CompUSA store and regional offices. And he put together two exhibits. The first one debuted 2 years ago. It's the Apple Pop-Up Museum. It has a, you know, complete history of Apple personal computing products and just consumer products in general, you know, iPods and pretty much everything they made. And then last year, he opened an exhibit called Link, which is a timeline of personal computing. So you walk in the door and you start more modern and you kind of go back in time through the exhibit to the original Kinback.
Mm-hmm. So it's a regression.
Yes. And this year we didn't have a new exhibit like that. We just kind of, we had about 24 general exhibitors for our VCF side of it. And then we expanded our speakers area and schedule.
Yeah. And just talking about the Apple pop-up museum, it's really, I mean, it's really a well done, museum. It's a full-fledged museum. I mean, it's not as big as like a major museum building, but it is a real museum. And frankly, I mean, I don't know if there's any competing Apple history museum that really stands up to it. So do you, Alan? I mean, it's really pretty good.
Wasn't Apple trying to finally going to open one in California?
No.
Yeah. No. I heard there was some push on that, but
Apple doesn't look back, Alan. Never. Well, never looks back.
You can't look forward unless you learn from the past. So.
Yeah. Amen, brother. But it really does stand up. It's just, it was really well done. I mean, so it is really well done. So, and then, so how many exhibits? Let's compare to the VCF East a little bit. So how many exhibits do you think were? Oh, actually, we have some corrections. We're kind of jumping around. We're a loose show, right, this time? So
yeah.
So go ahead, Jeff. What were some? Here we go. This is from Evan Koblitz.
Get some corrections around so we have some numbers to work off of for the VCF Southeast side of it. We had received some corrections from our VCF East coverage show when I was interviewed. Evan Koblitz himself, the guy with the last name.
Who I'm not sure what title he goes by, but he's essentially, you know, the producer director, you know, of this show.
He is an integral member of March. He corrected us. I didn't know how many exhibits there were. I just, you know, because I had to stay at my own for the longest time, but I was a little lower in number. I didn't go over. So there were 35 exhibits, not 20 or 25, like I was saying. Also, the keynote stuff, I understand there was a little bit of mix-up and some change around in the keynote, but officially the keynotes were Brian, always have trouble.
Kernighan,
okay, of C Unix fame. So, you know, he's been around in the business for Unix and C programming quite a while. And he replaced Wes Clark, who was ill on Saturday. So I knew somebody was sick. I just didn't get all the names right. So that's my bad. And then Wes came in as a replacement for Ted Nelson, who had to go and do some personal matter stuff the next day. Sunday's keynote was Bob Frankston, and that was brought to you by Evan Koblenz, who does have the last name I had mentioned. I didn't mention.
Well, he's the president of March, the Mid-Atlantic.
President of March, and he's also the orchestrator, the ringleader of the show.
Yeah, Retro Computing.
All March. Mid-Atlantic Retro Computing Hobbyist.
Yeah, thank you. So, longtime facilitator of the show there.
He's got a passion for it, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's certainly one of the most passionate people I know about vintage computing.
And very so, nice Alan, guy. So you went to both shows 2 years in a row. So, so obviously the show this year here in our area, VCF SE, it grew. And I think it was far more successful this year, which is a great thing. So I think it's growing now. So the VCF East, how would you describe it this year and last year?
Well, as you pointed out about the exhibits, certainly March had more. And I think they were, in general, kind of better quality exhibits just because you had, you know, so many core history people there. I mean, you had a lot of, you know, older iron, mm-hmm. a lot of PDP 8s and 11s. You know, David Geschwin did the restoration project with March and Resistor on their PDP 8. So that was unveiled there as a straight 8. So that was really cool to see. You know, this year they did a big focus on Amiga and PDP, you know, DEC equipment, PDP 8. So they had quite a lot of PDP 8 hardware there, which is also great to see. So it's two really different shows, really.
You had the March membership, as you mentioned. There was a lot in that area. A lot of the March membership from all around the region had easy access to that, and that probably mm-hmm. helped also.
And you also have to think, you know, within three and a half hours, there's about 40 million people, where 3 and 3.5 hours from Atlanta, there's maybe 10. So you have a bigger base, you know, about four times as larger public crowd base to draw from.
Good point.
Yeah, so I mean, the VCF East is very established, and it's a very successful show, and so we're not sure if necessarily this year was bigger than last year, but that doesn't mean it isn't still a very successful show.
I think it grew a little bit. They're kind of busting at the seams almost. The second exhibit hall, you know, had much more people in it, much more exhibits. You know, they kind of took the middle space, which last year was free and unoccupied.
Oh, okay.
Turned that into their PDP 8 themed exhibit space. So next year, if they grow a little bit more, I think they're going to have to look at expanding a little bit.
Yeah, there was a lot of elbow room. I was in that PDP room last year. And yeah, there was a lot of space, a lot of people can crowd in the middle, but that PDP section that took up a lot of it. You're like squeezing by everybody.
Yeah, Dave McGuire had a terrific exhibit right as you walk in with just PDP 11s and racks. So that's the first thing you see when you turn the corner. Hmm. So it really kind of set the mood when you walk in there.
I like to pay attention to that kind of stuff sometime in the future. I don't know. I want to exhibit next year, but I don't get to see all those things when I don't have a whole lot of people who can like show off my stuff or at least babysit it. My wife was there, but I don't want to put her through trying to explain what the video toaster was because she hasn't really played around with it much.
Yeah, that's one thing we're struggling with on the Southeast show is, you know, our speaker schedule the first 3 years ran Saturday, Sunday. So it's hard for people to step away from their exhibits and actually see who's speaking. Whereas the East has a great thing going on Friday where, you know, everybody can kind of enjoy the atmosphere and the information being shared.
Yeah. So just now, obviously, you know, just you're on the show. It's just your opinion. You don't necessarily speak for the whole of the group, but what's your opinion about that? Or what do you think it should stay the same way for next year? Or do you think it ought to change?
Well, I really love the East format. I wish we could do the Friday sessions here in the Southeast, but I'm not sure that we have that same amount of core audience.
Mm, right.
We could do that.
It's tough.
Yeah. I mean, most of the people that come to our show are walk-ins off the street or educators that have heard about it or, you know, more people that aren't really vintage computing enthusiasts who just, you know, I used to have one of that. That's the most common thing you'll hear at our show is I used to have one just like it. And then they'll engage the exhibitor and they'll talk for, you know, 10, 15 minutes and go to the next one. And it's terrific. But now we don't have the people that really want that in-depth technical knowledge.
Now, the VCF SE had a fairly big star speaker this year in the realm of computer history, and that was Jason Scott, who spoke both Saturday and Sunday. And I was surprised to hear that he was coming, and that was quite a treat. That was a pretty big deal for the show, actually.
So when we went up to East last year, we met Jason and we met Malcolm McLeod, who's from Australia. And we attended their talks and thought that they were just really charismatic and had a lot of great things to share. And we invited them down this year, and luckily they accepted. Malcolm McLeod happened to be in the United States, you know, attending VCF East. So that was one of the factors that influenced the two-week spread between mm-hmm. the shows.
Oh.
And then we flew Jason Scott down, and he graciously gave two talks, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. And so all those speaker sessions will be uploaded to YouTube. I'm giving myself 3 weeks, hopefully no later than that. So we videoed everything, we recorded all the audio, and we'll get those up and shared.
So I just want to say, too, I thought the so this year I played no part in the organization, the you know, creation of the show.
But I look how much better it ran.
And we noticed.
Yeah. No,
just kidding.
So I had a small little exhibit and I participated, but I mean, you guys did a great job. The show was a very nice success, and it's just everything seemed very well organized, good signage. The stage was fantastic. Just, you know, really impressive. So that was really nice to see.
Yeah, I made a big personal donation to the show this year.
I think what you do when you open up a credit card account, right?
Exactly. So if you need anyone that has a bar mitzvah or birthday party that's yeah. DJing, you know, let me know.
Are you going to be a wedding singer on the weekends?
I could be. I could be a folk singer, entertain people on the street corner.
A huge now, lighting setup. Now, there's one thing that maybe stands apart of the two shows fairly broadly, I think, too, is at the VCF SE, you know, the soldering kits and the whole soldering area is a pretty major part of the show here, but that's not going on at VCF East, right?
No, they have a soldering area.
Oh, they do?
It's a separate club that participates at okay. InfoAge Science Center. And so they come in, and it's actually in the first building, the main building.
All right.
They had a dedicated room.
Well, that's good.
So they have they do kits there, and I'm not sure where their kits come from, but they're more kind of prepackaged.
Uh-huh.
Whereas we kind of design them ourselves and run the boards ourselves. We do Maker Faire as well. Atlanta has a full Maker Faire. And so we'll set up a big booth there. So we have the soldering is kind of a side project that our club does on a larger scale. And we'll have kids that'll come back every year wanting the next kit. They will have built them all from the previous years. So every year we have to step it up. And this year we had a wristwatch kit. You can actually build.
Yeah, I'm waiting on mine, Alan.
Oh, okay.
I didn't pick that for my donation.
Kickstarter.
I picked that persistence of vision thing.
Yeah, we'll be fulfilling Kickstarter rewards next week.
Are they? They're going to still be kits, right?
Well, the persistence of vision surface mount, so it'll be sent out pre-assembled.
Oh, okay. I got reworking equipment. I thought it was going to be a kit. No big deal.
Yeah, those are all already built.
Okay. Still a fun thing. I saw it last year at VCF East. It's pretty neat. Well, so you know what you need to do to guarantee attendance is everybody's coming back for the next kit. You need to build a 10-year project that every year you build yeah. one-tenth
one
of
piece.
Something, and then it'll be all finished at the end of the decade. And then you can put together your secret robot.
Or maybe an Altair replica or something.
Oh, there you go.
Some 8-bit computer from the past. And on the 10th year, you get your processor, so you can't do anything until you get that.
Yeah. And it's a custom-made processor.
It's a FPGA with RTL of some obscure CPU from the 60s.
That'll work.
Yeah. So all in all, it was a really great show. We're very happy with the turnout. Very happy with the speaker attendance. We're going to get the videos up and had a much better quality on our video and audio recording this year. We still have footage from the previous 2 years of speakers, which year one was a lot of much bigger names. We had Carl Helmers, who was the editor of Byte Magazine, mm-hmm. Dan Kottke from Apple, Dan Huston from Apple, several more speakers in that kind of realm. And then last year we had much more focused on vintage archivism. So we had a panel from Georgia Tech. We had a professor from Georgia Tech. Starting to draw a blank. But yeah, we've had issues the last 2 years with sound or lighting, and this year we kind of got that rectified. So
I had one question about the you had a consignment section, right?
We did.
I saw it from just looking at the pictures alone. I saw there was like a big table of books.
Yeah, it was a gigantic table.
Yeah, yes. It looked somebody just closed a library.
Hey, where did those all come from?
So they came from a gentleman here in Atlanta named John Harris, and that was his private collection that he had accumulated over the years. And when he got ready to retire and move to Houston, he put all of it in a storage building. Well, it had been sitting in storage for many years. I'm not sure how many. And they had just been paying and paying and paying on these storage units and not really getting any value from it. So he looked around for a source or a destination for a donation. And I answered his emails. And over the course of 8 months or so, we kind of negotiated a time. And he delivered about 2,500 books to my garage.
Wow. And now you had to park outside.
Basically. So we brought them up to VCF Southeast and put them on consignment tables. And we sold about nearly 200 books out of the 2,500.
I bought two.
It was actually all kinds. You know, it was everything from Unix and C to Java to Microsoft ASP.
A lot of books. I mean, a lot of big, thick books.
Yeah, I cherry-picked a few before I delivered them to the show. But
of course. Somebody, you have to get paid for your work somehow.
And the consignment area did pretty well, I think, right? I brought a dozen different things, and most of it sold.
Well, nobody bought my 400-disc DVD player. I was disappointed.
any unique stuff or interesting items that made it to the consignment table? I know in VCF East, apparently somebody came in with a whole bunch of cool stuff, which I missed out on, and there was like a feeding frenzy. Was that...
I got mad at Kyle Owen, because he got in on that feeding frenzy. He bought a bunch of core memory boards and some Heathkit trainers.
I wanted the Heathkit trainer. I did those in school, and I wanted one, and they were going for, what, $5 or $10 each?
Yeah, $5 each.
Yeah, and yeah, I was mad. And I could see that room from my location, but I just see a sliver of a door opening, and I didn't even see that come in, nor did I hear the feeding frenzy.
Our mutual friend, Brian Stewart, who gave talks at both shows, actually got one of those Heathkits for $5, and I was so mad.
Yeah, so I keep watching for those on eBay, and it's like, you know, I don't want to pull the trigger on what people are asking for it, and I'm just at the point where I'm going to build my own, make a clone. I'll flood the market with clones.
I've got a few projects underway that I'm probably going to... Next year at VCF East, I'll probably be both a vendor and hopefully a speaker. I'm kind of getting motivated to do that.
So, Alan, what do you think about if you compare and contrast, the two facilities? How about first, just pure, exhibition space? You know, so you got this big giant, former CompUSA, and then you have the Info Age Science Center.
Info Age Science Center, for anyone who's never been, simply must go. It's an awesome facility. It has as much.
Okay, I think you meant the facility must go.
No.
We need to get rid of that.
Yeah, it has a very unique history. It was a radio processing station for the United States Army during the Second World War. So it's all the buildings are from the 1940s or that period, maybe some a little bit later. And it has a lot of character to it. Unfortunately, a lot of those buildings are not accessible to the public. So they have some that are set up for the March Museum. They have some that are set up for their festival that they hold every year. And then other special interest clubs that have their facilities at InfoAge.
And they have the Radio and Television Museum there too.
Yeah, and then they have large satellite dishes or radio receiver dishes down the street that you can actually take tours of. Very interesting facility, but unfortunately, because of the age of the buildings, it's not really well suited to large crowds or large exhibition spaces.
There's lots of video hum in your monitors.
Yeah,
I run into that problem.
And oh, really? Just from being there? Just the environment causes that?
It's the electric that's supplied there. Oh. They're feeding a lot off of whatever circuit runs to that area. I noticed when I turned on my equipment, it's like my projector was doing some fluttering because it was just getting some subtle variations in voltage. It just wasn't maintaining. And then when everybody starts turning on their big iron, of course, that's going to suck a little bit more.
And yeah, of course, the wiring and some of those.
You're right, Jeff. It sucks for everybody.
It's knob and tube, right? Everybody was issued a fire extinguisher.
Yeah, so by comparison, you know, our facility, at least where we're at right now, is a former CompUSA, so we have lots of floor space and lots of lighting.
That CompUSA, was that like in a like a pad area in a larger shopping mall complex? How does that work, or is it just a big commercial zone?
Big commercial zone, more of a – the majority of the complex is a strip mall type format.
Yeah, very typical.
You have a Publix that anchors it on one end, which is for this is a local supermarket chain, and then you had a CompUSA that anchored it on the other side, and then there's some separate buildings that kind of float around out front.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about the CompUSA, VCF Southeast is in the main retail space that used to be CompUSA, and then they have their corporate regional offices kind of in a connected area to the building, and that's where the Apple Pop-Up Museum and our speakers area is at. And then we have some warehouse space in the back.
Oh, so you're actually fully using that building for your own needs and or, well, let's see. Which society owns it all again or is leasing it now?
Well, a local businessman named Lonnie Mims runs a commercial real estate business here in Atlanta. And it was
so he's sort of donating it or?
Yeah, he's basically giving us a use of it, you know, without free of charge, essentially, which is a great benefit for us.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and he's working on other plans. I don't know how much I can speak to them, but he's trying to do more of a community outreach type program here in Atlanta, makerspace type community. So I think we may be in a more permanent facility in the next few years.
Yeah, we need more people like that in this, in all this vintage and maker stuff. I've only been to one maker fair, and I wish there were some a little closer, a little easier to get to in my area. The New York one's closest to me, but I don't like to go into New York. So I went to Detroit Maker Faire to keep from going to New York, and I live in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
I don't know if you – did you both know about – I know Evan Koblitz explained this to me, and I just looked it up about the info age. But you know that – so basically that facility or part of it was once called – was part of Fort Evans.
Right.
And then – but going way back to 1912, between 1912 and 1914 – it was built as a facility for Marconi.
Yes.
Working with the U.S. Army.
There's a lot of rich radio history.
Yeah.
That facility. Yeah. New Jersey in general.
I tried to look around at some of the Army radio stuff. I'm U.S. Army Signal Corps myself, but that stuff predates me by two decades.
Oh, yeah.
And in addition to the March Vintage Museum, they also have other museums on site that go back to diving, radio technology, old Army equipment. So yeah. There's a lot to see there.
The Shipwreck Museum.
And Jeff, you know that my wife and I are also both Army Signal Corps.
That's right.
We both went to, we met at Fort Gordon, Georgia.
Yeah, but yeah, you stayed in the better places. I stayed in those Quonset hut things down on the southeast side of, you know, the hot ones without the air conditioning.
So what other things have we not touched on that we wanted to mention here? Guess we've discussed it enough, huh? But yeah. What anything else?
I'm checking off our notes here.
Favorite exhibits.
Yeah, that was my contribution to the list of notes. Yeah, out of you two, I'm going to ask you guys this question because I think this whole thing was I was supposed to ask you guys this question. What were your favorite exhibits? We'll start with you, Alan.
Well, for Southeast, I particularly like Kyle Owen's exhibit just because it was PDP-8. He had an ASR-33 teletype there chattering all the time.
And let people use it and type
had the
stuff
AM radio music trick. You know, it really kind of connected people to the past. He also had the same exhibit at VCF East. However, I have to say my favorite East exhibit was, I'm going to butcher his name, but Anthony Straglia. I can't remember his last name. He had the Fairlight exhibit.
Yes, that's one of the ones I wanted to see because I'm a big 80s music fan. So I had to see the Fairlight.
Yeah, and I met Anthony last year when he had his 3B2 exhibit, and I'm a big 3B2 aficionado. So, Yeah, that he was my rock star at VCF East.
But he had a little problem with his, he couldn't get all 8 voices working at the same time because of some power issues with that Fairlight, if I recall.
And I was really disappointed because he actually bought it in Atlanta from a former owner here. And had I known, we could have crated it up for him. Yeah, he couldn't get all of the voice cards running at once because he had some power supply issues.
And, you know, Kyle's was, I think, my favorite overall. And his was right across from mine. And, it just was, engaging and, very old and historic and working. And people were able to come up and type on the teletype and just, like, print whatever they wanted on paper tape. And it was just very engaging.
One of my coworkers came to the show, and as he was leaving, he sent me a text message. It was my favorite comment from our show. He said, "Had I known my kids were so much into Doom, I could have saved all the money on the Xbox 360 and PS."
Exactly.
So we had a Doomland going, which was a great hit with kids.
Yeah,
and yeah, to kids, that's very old, and it's not, you know.
But it is. But a it LAN is. Party? Come on.
We had a
You got to plug them together, Jeff?
Yeah. No, just step back. Just connect them all with 9600 baud modems.
We had a big video wall that had 4 Atari 2600s projecting up on it.
And I saw those pictures. That was neat.
Yeah. So then Ben Boglia or Bolga, sorry, butchered his name again. A young man who's in our local club here, who's a teenager,
actually
put together an exhibit, which was retro gaming. So he brought all sorts of retro gaming systems from Commodores to Ataris and put them out and put chairs in front of them. That was a big hit.
And his parents are really nice people, really involved. They made the t-shirts, right, Alan?
They did, yeah.
And they're
Michelle and Mitchell.
Just such a nice family, and just they really support their son, and just a wonderful mix of people there.
Yeah, we have 2 young members of our club, Nolan as well, who it's great to see young kids just get into this vintage computer hobby. It just carries on that knowledge and tradition for the next generation.
Yeah, my kids are sort of into this stuff. I think my son is a little bit more than my daughter, but he likes to break out the Atari every once in a while and play it. As long as he doesn't break any of the cartridges, I'm fine with it. But to him, he likes his modern gaming too.
I think I can still play all the way through Zelda, both levels, without dying.
See, that's same. For me, the cutoff, I wouldn't play Zelda. For me, the cutoff was everything up to Nintendo, but not including the Nintendo NES. Now, my son has a collection. He starts from the Nintendo NES and goes all the way up. He also has my Sega Dreamcast. I bought it, but I'm letting him use it. So I keep the timeline from 85 prior, and he keeps the timeline from 85 to today.
Yeah, that's another contrasting point between East and Southeast. I think March kind of defines a cutoff in the early 80s, about the introduction of the 5150 IBM PC. So we kind of go a little bit further than that. We have a lot of exhibitors that will show machines from 80s through early 90s. Mm-hmm. So I think it's still a pretty big piece of computer history.
You're like the 20-25 year roll. Right.
Anything that could be like officially considered an antique, by the 25-year rule.
Or how about it? You could almost call it the nostalgia rule. If you can be nostalgic about it, it's old enough.
Next year, it's going to be Nostalgia Computer Festival 1.0.
It doesn't exist any longer. Well, like the Doom LAN party is a perfect example of that. I mean,
it's early 90s.
It wasn't quite. Well, yeah, I guess the first year it was roughly about 20 years old. But that was, what an archaic thing it is compared to modern gaming.
Wow, that was 20 years old. So that is a good idea, having that, because people don't realize how long ago it was. I mean, yeah, if I think back 20 years ago, what was I doing? I was dialing up to Genie Information Services.
Right. So not only was it not online, as far as people playing against each other, there really wasn't an internet yet, not for the mass. So,
no, if you wanted a shell account, you could get
it. I mean, I remember going to a Doom LAN party a few times with some friends of mine, and literally they're hauling their displays and desktops over to some guy's house, which is crazy.
I got a full tower, 7 slots up front.
Yeah. One guy, I can remember, you know, one guy had just, a friend of mine had just got a Pentium 60, and he bought it before Windows 95 came out. Then he got Windows 95 right when it came out. I stood in line with him at CompUSA, you know, at midnight, whatever that August day was, from the buy Windows 95. And I was a big Mac person, but it was still kind of fun.
I don't think I've ever stood in line for anything like that before. I probably missed out on some cool things, but
yeah, he didn't make a lot of money, but he had bought that computer. He bought, you know, Windows 95, that, you know, again, the day it came out, and bought the Plus Pack. And I think he bought Office, you know, right there, midnight, whatever that Friday night, whatever it was. Wow. So he dropped a lot of money in 1995 on that.
And then Apple rolled with that idea years later.
Yeah.
Even the latest i7s today will be vintage one day. You just don't know what's going to be collectible or valuable 30 years from now.
Well, you know, and you know what's happening too, talking about PCs and the beige clones and all that. You know, the more things get trashed and unappreciated and destroyed, the more rare the ones that exist become. So now, you know, anything that's IBM branded is starting to be worth something.
Especially Microchannel.
Yeah, invaluable. No, even just like an XT or an AT, they're hard to come by now. They're worth something. And they were total trash, you know, not even 10 years ago.
That's true. Yeah, you give somebody an IBM PS1 system with Microchannel, I think they had it, and let them go with it, and then put all your Microchannel cards on eBay for $300 each and let that person buy them. Okay, so I quieted the whole room.
Well, I've been told that I'm an accumulator. I'm not really a collector, that I collect things that I've had a connection to in my personal past.
Uh-huh.
And I bought a...
You're a hoarder.
Yeah, I was going to say, my wife just hints at me. I'm going to go watch Hoarders. You go down in your basement where all your stuff's at.
So just recently I bought a beige box Northgate 386.
I remember those.
Yeah, Northgate was one of the big clone makers in the late 80s, along with Dell and Austin and JDR. And it really doesn't have any value to anybody that just didn't own one as a young adult or back in the 80s. So I had a Northgate 386 back
then. They were one of the companies that actually had the mini catalog inside the computer shopper, you know, like a four-page spread.
Their claim to fame was the Omni keyboard, which, you know, kind of challenged IBM's Model M as the keyboard of choice for power programmers.
I found an ad looking at an online PDF magazine for Northgate 486 back when 486 was like brand new on the market, and they were touting this thing as having Hercules graphics, 486 power, 25 megahertz, and they were selling it for $5,200.
Yeah, but I mean, to most people it would be worthless, but to me, you know, I think it sold for, I think I paid $70-something for it, but I bid way more than that just because to me it had value. It had a connection to history.
And yeah, some of those computers, they had a recognizable shape and style and even a marketing concept that modifies their value too.
Well, you open it up and it was a, you know, a clone Taiwanese motherboard, you know, of the very vintage era. Nothing special, but you know, they put their own little molded plastic front on the front of it to kind of set it apart. But you just never know. I mean, what's vintage to one person may not be vintage to another, and vice versa.
And I'm looking at a couple HP Vectors here.
Where?
Those are desirable, actually, because of one of the talks Malcolm McLeod gave at both VCF East last year and VCF Southeast this year for image disk. Because on the image disk compatibility list, you know, HP Vectra is compatible with just about everything, all the different things and formats.
Yeah, unfortunately, the case needs to have some stuff in it to be valuable, like a power supply.
Yeah, it's a power switch.
Yeah, that's. I look at the boring beige box stuff. Yeah, it still doesn't have any ring to me. Not like the old 8-bit and even some of the like the Commodore and Atari 16-bit stuff. So one of these days, maybe in another decade, I'll be like, you know, I kind of wish I kept that compact Presario, the one with the not the full 5 1/4-inch drive, but it had that slit for the two drives, you know, because it was all custom made and had the custom connectors. Because something was unique about it, and I remember working on those when I was fixing PCs for a living. But I'm not into that market yet. I probably will be, and I'm sure other people will be. And of course, we'll redefine the term vintage computer for future shows.
It'll be redefined just as time marches on.
But right now, I think I should start formulating touch-up paint for those beige boxes so I can sell them.
I think your wife would appreciate that.
Okay. Sold $3,000 worth of touch-ups paint because you can't find that paint color anymore. Oh, anyway, actually, I'm actually looking forward to tomorrow. I get to go to a vintage, vintage radio show, Kutztown radio show. See what I can find in old radios. Might even find some old computer stuff there because they show up from time to time. That's where I got a Silent 700 terminal last year. They had one of those at VCF East demonstrating calling bulletin boards. I don't know if you saw that one, Alan.
This year's exhibit?
Yeah. They had the guy who had he was doing the bulletin board stuff.
Yeah, the world needs more modem tones. Absolutely. he had a more modern computer under the desk that was actually running, I think it was Windows 3.1, with four instances of Spitfire BBS, which is the BBS I ran in the 90s. Yeah. So I was happy to see that. And he had a modem bank for USR modems and I think four different machines hooked up to him. So it's great to hear modem tones again. We had a similar display at our year one VCF Southeast that I did with a PBX. And we actually had an ASR33 teletype call up a board from the 90s.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's a bit different. So yeah,
I can't do the full screen ANSI though.
It would be nice to have a, you know, kind of a phone network at one of these shows where anybody can just, you know, if they have a modem in their vintage machine, could plug in and be able to transfer files or dial each other's boards up. Even at our club meetings, we often have, or at least one time we had a bulletin board day where everyone brought their vintage machines in, ran their old boards, or called up one of the boards, and it was a pretty fun time.
Oh, that would be neat. Wonder what machine I would bring. So everybody bring something they want to see if they can get it online that way. That sounds like something to consider.
I lost my original graphics from the board I ran in 91 time frame. So I had to kind of recreate some of those for bulletin board day.
But so you had like the ANSI graphics and the ASCII graphics for depending on who logged in with what, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And even at the East show this year, he had one of them running RIP, which didn't have a very long life, but it was.
I remember that. Yeah. EGA and didn't have a long life.
It kind of came out right as the BBSs were starting to die in the 94 time frame.
Before it went supernova.
Yeah, and then kind of World Wide Web took it over, and the rest is history.
And the rest is ads. All right, let's see. David, you got any more questions for Alan?
No.
Well, thank you guys for having me on.
Well, okay, I do have a question.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I got to scroll down here. I see it now. Go ahead, David, ask it.
Well, Jeff and I are talking about going to the Vintage Computer Festival Midwest. I think we're both pretty committed to doing that, which is in Chicago area.
I think I am too. I had a conflicting appointment or a conflicting trip in August, and that's been canceled recently.
Oh. So, it's the end of August. And so what do you think about, well, that's good. You're considering it. I think some other club members might be considering it?
Probably. I know Kyle Owen will be up for anything.
So I can get a free ride then? I can say plane ticket? Flash will drive?
It depends on how much stuff we're taking. We've got a big Sprinter van we can load up.
Which I think I looked at. Now how far was it to New Jersey, to the VCF East?
14 hours.
I think it's roughly about that to this show. Maybe a little bit less, actually.
I think it's 10 hours. And I considered taking the train, but
it was 10 to 11 to Indianapolis from Atlanta. So it's not that much farther to Chicago.
Yeah. And it's another good established show. So this is their 10th one. And I went to the one in, I want to say it was 2011. It's either 2011 or 2012. And it was really good. So, and actually you're talking about BBSs. There was a guy there that had set up a BBS. Or was it a BBS or was it just, I guess it must have been, but with modems and calling out and stuff. He set up like a phone system and then had the computers calling in and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing about going to these festivals are meeting all the people that you correspond with and relate to electronically, and you finally get to shake their hand and talk about stuff in person and share beer.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the best part there.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I go. I mean, I met so many people at East the last 2 years that I just, you know, been talking to CC Talk and all the various mailing lists. And it's nice to put faces to the names and get that personal connection. I met John Monahan this year for the first time, which was great.
So let's go.
Maybe if we cross our fingers, Waz will show up out of the blue.
What's that? That's June, July, August. So we're looking at, that's roughly 3.5 months away. So that's plenty of time.
So what is it, David? Are we going to get a history of personal computing thing set up, or how's it going to go? Did we plan anything that way? Or is
I'll visit
and walk around at a minimum, obviously.
Yeah.
But if there's going to be a table set up, well, maybe we can discuss that or coordinate something.
Tell you the truth, I'd almost rather, because like I did a table that last time, maybe it might be better that we just try to like do a podcast from there, and otherwise we're just, you know,
walk around and
we're just
snippets.
Fancy free and just hang out.
Yeah, because let's see, we got that. We have that, and you mentioned the Commodore computer thing going on.
Yeah, the emergency.
That's all the same weekend too, right?
Yeah, they've been together for, I want to say, 4 or 5 years. And
I forgot, the Underground Retrocade is there too.
It's the Emergency Chicagoland Commodore Convention.
That's it, yes.
Announcing year 10 of our enduring and pancific 5-year plan. The 10th free-thinking ECCC event.
Yeah, it'd be so much to do that weekend.
Yeah, and then they, you know, and like the VCF East, they like to go out and eat, you know, and do stuff. And I think it changed venues. Before, it was like the exhibiting venue is right at the same hotel, which is kind of nice, obviously, because you're right there, you're staying there, and everybody's all together, out of towners anyway. And but you know, you got to go to this one restaurant we went to. It was great, and you get like a Chicago hot dog and stuff like that.
Yeah, I got to try one of those, and start talking about Dub Bears.
Doubles.
Doubles. Yeah, actually, I'm looking forward to the show. Unfortunately, I can't bring my kids along. Well, my daughter, she'll be busy with her school stuff, but my son starts back, and he starts his senior year in high school that week.
I can skip the first week.
Yeah, you can. No big deal. Anyway, well, if we're all talked out, might as well close out the show here. Want to thank you for being on board here, Alan. And
my pleasure.
I'm sorry, I forgot that you were there at the VCF East, and now I can picture who you were. And of course, David, as usual. Well, since you belong here anyway, so. Thank you for joining us. All right, next show will be in 2 weeks. We're going back to our regular schedule.
Get a break.
Of a little breathing room next week. That one will upload on Friday, May 24th, so it'll still be the same month. And we will be covering the IBM personal computer.
Big beige.
With the ISA slots, not the microchannel slots. IBM personal computer of 1981, which reminds me, I'll have to dig mine out so I can see if it still works. Our website is thehistoryofpersonalcomputing.com. Plus, follow us both on both Twitter and Facebook. And send your feedback, please, to feedback@historyofpersonalcomputing.com. Please tell someone about us and write a review on iTunes or spread the word with Facebook, Google, Twitter, any other social media network out there. Maybe not Tumblr, not too big of a fan of Tumblr. Perhaps you're in a specialty discussion group. Tell them.
And you're going to, right, Alan?
Yeah, I'm going to put an ad in the Craigslist.
Or we're going to take his $5,000 if he doesn't.
All right.
Anyway,
Pinterest. Don't forget Pinterest.
That's right. Put pictures up on Pinterest.
Pinterest.
That's a regional thing. Pinterest. Pinterest actually started.
Well, actually, it's Pin Interest. So right, Pinterest Interest. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it reminds me of my grandmother who everybody would say batteries and she would say batteries.
Yeah.
But she was sort of like, not Pennsylvania Dutch, but kind of offshoot of Pennsylvania Dutch. More like Mennonite. They just spoke a little bit different. Anyway, see you all next time. I'll see you next time, David. And Alan, thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.